Welcome to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the radio-controlled aviation hobby, where each week, our hosts discuss everything from airplanes to helicopters and everything in between.
I think I'm ready. In three, two, and whatever, action. Welcome to episode number 59, RC Hangar Time. Today we're going to talk about spinny things, props, propellers, whatever you want to call them. Things that make your aircraft go.
Hopefully.
Or not go.
All right, tonight we've got CPO with us, and of course Wade. Wade with the introduction.
Yo!
And myself, Dustin. So I think we'll just get right into what we did this week, or for some of us, like Wade and I, we weren't able to participate in the podcast last week, so maybe what we've done over the last 2 weeks, and then next week we'll get to catch up with Mike and whoever can make the podcast then.
He's a very busy boy.
He is. Wade, CPO, one of you guys want to start us off?
CPO, why don't you go ahead? I know you're always interesting to listen to because you do so much all the time.
Too much, I think. I got a couple things done in the last week. In particular, the Apollo 50 build is now complete.
I saw it. I'm jealous.
It looks so nice, and it's just a really cool aircraft. And it's my first precision pattern style plane, so it's a little bit different style. I just really enjoyed the process. It, you know, challenged me a little bit because some new areas which I haven't been familiar with in building before, some new control mechanisms, if you will. But it's all ready to go, and then now it's just a matter of getting the ability to have time to maiden it and the weather to maiden it to align. And I don't know when that's going to happen, to be honest with you. I was way too busy this last Sunday or this last week. On Sundays, I play worship team. I play guitar, electric guitar for our church. So I was pretty much – Sunday was a wash, and Saturday was spent preparing for that. So I'm hoping next weekend the weather's nice and I'll be able to make it out and get that thing in the air. But really cool build, a lot of fun. So I'm happy to be done with that. Although, you know, the longer it takes me to maintain it, the longer it stays in one piece. So there is a benefit to not being able to maintain it, but yeah. I'll.
It looks really good. I think that'd be the one downfall for me is building a plane that looks like that. Is I'd just be afraid to maintain it.
Yeah, it's cool. But I have to remember, I'm not doing this because I like modeling as much as I like the flying part. So. You know, if I wanted to just build models and put them on a shelf, I guess that would be a whole different story. But I really, really excited to get it in the air. And I learned a lot from the Tucano, right? I learned, number one, where some of my own personal limitations are in my just skills and ability. So I'll directly apply that to this aircraft and, you know, hopefully it'll have a longer life. But all of the Tucano parts literally unplug from the Tucano carnage and plug straight into this Apollo. I mean, use the same size servos, full-size servos, which I guess is unusual in a pattern plane that size. I think they tend to use the smaller servos oftentimes just to save weight. But this one used the full-size servos, so that was a bonus. The motor was a direct plug-in, ESC, all that battery. All that stuff came out unscathed in the crash and was a direct plug into the Apollo. So it saved a lot of money as well.
Nice.
So the other thing I've been working on in the last week has been getting back into FPV. I've been really interested in getting into the 250 size quad racing scene and just in general getting back into FPV. And about a year ago, I got in, just kind of dabbled in it a little bit with a Boss Cam set that I got from Hobby King, just a 200 milliwatt, 5.8 gigahertz setup with a standard rubber ducky antennas. And I put that on my Bixler and kind of sort of flew it FPV, but kind of sort of flew it line of sight, you know, one of those kind of things. Anyway, I crashed the Bixler into a tree And I just kind of shelved all that stuff and didn't really think much about it and focused on other areas of the hobby. But since I've been wanting to get back into FPV, I decided I would really look at what the best gear to get would be, particularly as it you know, pertains to quad racing. So I started doing some research on the internet and talking with you guys and talking with the guys on the forum and, you know, just basically trying to learn what I wanted to do to get started. And I was fortunate enough that Readymade RC sent me a demo set that they have, their FPV 5.8 gigahertz quick start package that they have for reviewers, and I got a hold of that. So I'm playing with that. I have to give it back when I'm done, but it's giving me a really good indication of how the Immersion RC 600 milliwatt video transmitter is going to work out for me. And I'm really liking the setup. It's the one with the LCD screen on the tripod. Comes complete, like ready, like plug and play. I literally pulled it out of the box and rubber banded it to my tricopter, and then a couple zip ties to hold the video transmitter on, and like plugged everything in, and it just worked. So I'm super thrilled about that. As a matter of fact, I already contacted them and said, "Hey, what if I just want to buy this from you and keep it? You know, I really like it." So anyway, I'm playing with that. I don't have a quad yet. I have one of those coming here in the next couple of weeks probably. But in the meantime, I'm really enjoying, you know, kind of tinkering with this this quick start set. And I think it's really the way to go for me. I'm fairly certain. And I was surprised. I posted a video on YouTube, and then I also shared it on Facebook. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I literally just like my first flight with this kit on, did two batteries, and I just recorded them. I didn't have a DVR, so I just pointed the camcorder at the LCD screen on the tripod and recorded it. And I, you know, flew around the backside of my house and then across into a field next to me, you know, through a whole bunch of trees. And I had a little bit of, you know, signal loss. You can tell now that's obvious that that's going to happen. But I never lost signal to where the tricopter wasn't in complete control at all times, you know, from a visibility perspective. So it was really encouraging because I know people who, you know, when they go into the trees, they lose signal immediately, or go behind a house or whatever, because, you know, if 5.8 gigahertz isn't very well known for its penetration abilities, but this setup they sent me is holding up really well. So I don't know if you guys have any specific experience with this particular setup, but I know you're a lot more experienced than I am with FPV.
What antennas did it come with? Just the Fat Shark spiral nets?
Yeah, that's what it's got.
Yeah, I have that 600 milliwatt transmitter, and I have a set of Attitude SDs and a set of the HD Dominators, or the Dominator HDs, I guess. And I'm running the same thing, Fat Shark, with their 600 TV line camera, and it does really good. I'm running the blue beams from Stone Blue, or for, I guess from
VAS,
yeah, Video Aerial Systems. And they run great, and I have a 5-turn helical and a 3-turn helical, and I usually use that instead of the spiral net on my goggles. I just have to remember to turn my head a little bit when I get out of that kind of that triangle, I guess. But yeah, they work great.
You need an antenna tracker.
Yeah, it's called my neck and my memory.
So what's the real difference between the ones that I have, the spiral nets and the blue beams?
Yeah, they're both a clover leaf. I think I would almost bet, and I can't guarantee this, but the spiral net antennas that Fat Shark's coming with, I would almost bet they're as good as the blue beams.
They I mean, you're not going to get noticeable differences on the same style of antenna between those two, in my mind. You just won't. I don't know.
I did start out with a set of Cloverleaf, the Hobby King Cloverleaf antennas.
Well, that's... And they were garbage. The same. Well, yeah, they were the same as the VAS until they added the Hobby King label on it, and then all hell broke loose.
The blue beams were night and day difference between the Hobby King Cloverleafs and the, and I think it's just quality control for sure. I think the antenna technology is the same. It's just, you know, no shorts, no impedance loss, you know, quality. And I'm assuming the Fat Shark stuff's the same way.
Yeah, I'm running a 5-turn helical. That's the one with the spiral on the middle, right, and the square background.
Yeah.
for us simple folk. I actually got from Stone Blue Airlines. He posted it up. Every now and then, Jeremiah from Stone Blue will post up these like flash sales on Facebook of used gear. And I say used in a light term. It's very, very lightly used and always in excellent condition. But I picked up a receiver 5-turn helical and a right-hand circular polarized, basically the freaking Cloverleaf, all Blue Beam Ultra stuff for $35.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm running it all on the Bosscam 200 – no, Bosscam 600 milliwatt, which is overkill.
Yeah.
Way overkill on the power, and I'm loving it. Like, even for 5.8, I just set that helical antenna on the roof of my car, and I haven't lost signal yet.
Nice.
What kind of range are you getting?
My range will definitely beat, like, a mile and a half, 2 miles on that. Easy.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking I would be happy if I could get a mile out without.
Oh, you'll definitely get that on, especially on the stuff you got, especially because that stuff's pretty quality. I won't push it because I'm running Spectrum, and that stuff is really finicky.
Yeah. Right.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been playing with that, and I'll be sharing my experiences with that. It's kind of a learning. It's a learning thing for me, but it also gives me a chance to check out the products too, and figure out what's the best solution. The next step after this is going to be figuring out about goggles, and I'm really glad I started with the display. I was fully intending on going straight to a goggles setup and just like going full in, you know, both feet into the deep end. But what I found out is playing around with a new sort of FPV point of view that I'm not really used to. It was nice to be able to just look up from the screen and go, oh, okay, I'm about 3 feet off the ground at this point, and getting a because. You know, you've got three axes to deal with, and it's pretty easy for me to tell, like, the roll axis and the pitch axis. You know, I'm going forward, I'm going backwards. I can tell all that from the video. The hard thing for me to discern in the video is what my altitude is. So, you know, and obviously no OSD on this system right now. But so it was nice to be able to every once in a while just glance up and go, okay, now I know how high I am based on what I see, and then I can kind of mimic that throughout my flight and kind of maintain some understanding of how high I am when I can't see it. But it felt really natural. So the next step I think will be to integrate the goggles in, and I don't know, I'll probably just get some goggles and plug them into that ground station and just, you know, tether myself to the ground station, to try that. So, yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
that's kind of what I do too. I have the Fat Shark and I have the Attitude SDs, and they're, you know, paired so I don't have to have the ground station, but with my Dominator HDs, I'm still running those off the Boss Cam system. So I'm tethered, and it's really not that big of a deal.
Yeah. I don't figure it would, you know, so what? I've got a cord hanging off. I mean, that doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but, and I think for my permanent purchase, whatever I'm going to end up with permanently, I think I'm gonna probably shoot for the same thing, because I'm concerned if I get things that are too integrated that I won't be able to change, you know, without either a lot of expense or a lot of hassle. If I want to switch frequencies, or, you know, I want to change something out, you know, I don't know. It just makes sense to kind of keep it all separate. The only thing I don't have now, which I kind of wish I had, was a DVR. To record, and, you know, I can always add that to the ground station. And even if I get goggles that don't have a DVR built in, like I was looking at the Dominators and the Predator, or does Predators have a DVR?
That's the Attitude
Attitude
version 2s, and then the Dominator HDs.
And the Dominators. So I was looking at those because of the DVR, and then I thought, well, if I'm tethered to a ground station, then that doesn't become a have to have in the goggles anymore, and it gives me more flexibility on what I do with my, you know, with my setup. So
yeah,
I'll play around. One, I did learn a great lesson, which is if you are flying with the display in front of you, and then you occasionally look up and fly line of sight, you know, periodically, don't do that when it's like 3 feet in front of you and your nose in, because your controls immediately are reversed. And it took my brain about a half a second to figure out that the controls are reversed, but it took about a quarter of a second for it to hit the ground before I caught on. I was like, oh, I shouldn't have looked up and tried to take line of sight control with it, you know, in a nose in orientation, because it just totally screwed me up. So I learned my lesson on that. But the good news is my tricopter is nearly indestructible. I just change out four zip ties, and the two motors that fell off are right back on where they started. So that thing is taking a beating, and it just keeps on ticking. So
is that how that goes, or is it takes a lick and – never mind, whatever.
You know, however you want to sing it. So that's all that's happening with me. I do want to give a shout out to somebody on the Facebook group, actually in the RC Hangar Time Flight Club group, which is actually a smaller subset of the group with just the Flight Club members. But Rick Rivers, I don't know if you guys have seen his stuff, but he's been posting in there quite a bit lately, and I was just kind of amazed at his P-51 Mustang scratch build. And I don't know if you've seen it or not, but this is the epitome of like scratch modeling. He's just been cutting out foam parts and carving it and showing his progress all along the way. And I get a sense like there's no plan here. Like he's just totally random. Just, hey, let's do this. I mean, he, you know, custom made his own canopy. You know, he carved a wood block into the shape of a canopy and molded the plastic around. I mean, just really going to town on it. And I think the thing that struck me the most is when I realized he made his tail feathers, you know, the horizontal and vertical stabilizers and all that, the control surfaces, was out of like a foam, like to-go container for food. He just literally just like traced it on the top of the container, cut it out, and now it's part of his airplane. And I just thought, man, that's cool. And pretty awesome that somebody can be that creative, just to, out of their mind, just come up with a design. And I think he's going to have it flying here pretty soon. It looks like it's almost complete. But shout out to him for really just being inspirational in scratch building.
So just remind me, it's red. The scheme on it's red, black, and white, right? Is that correct?
I think no. He's got a red, white, and blue paint scheme. As far as I know right now, only his wings are painted, but the wings are red, white, and blue with like white stars, kind of an American flag, sort of a look to them.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I've seen it. I just, I might be confusing him with the wakeboard films guy. I know that he did a scratch. He's been doing a couple of foam scratch build too. And,
yeah.
I saw what he was doing. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, Rick's been coming along. He's also the same guy, right, that did the big Pink Panther foamy that we talked about before. But I think he's heard us talk about him. Now he's like stepping up his game with this P-51. So, but he got my attention. So I'll give him fair credit. But that's it. What do you guys got going?
What do you got going on, Wade?
Well, I just finished up basically the big giant shoot for the city here. So I'm done with that final editing. And then my free trial of Adobe Premiere ended. So I just paid for that.
Nice.
I'm so cheap.
building. That's another word for it.
Frugal, if you will. Then I basically got the Diatone at 250 FPV quad. It's just an all-in-one plastic kit. That's all it is. And I'm building that from the pieces of my tricopter. I just had to basically buy one motor, one ESC, and I'm in business.
I was going to say it's going to be a little bit awkward with your tricopter parts. You're missing some motors.
I got this. Don't you worry. What I'm going to do is I'm going to mock up a fake motor on the one backside, and then I'll just run a belt from the one motor over to the fake motor, which will drive it. Should totally work.
Dude, should go work for it.
Actually, if you do that with all the motors, you'll have a what is that design that holy crap, the 3D quadcopter, the first one.
Oh, the Stingray.
That was all belt driven, I think, or something like that.
But yeah, so I'm going to build that as soon as we get done tonight recording here. Then I'm actually going to go in and finish it up. I got some LEDs to wire on it. The FPV gear is Boss Cam stuff. So I'll be running that just because it's cheap and I don't have to worry about destroying it, which I will do. I have all the prongs on my CC3D board that are all bent. So now they're 45 degree angle pins.
Nice.
Because I've crashed the tricopter so many times that I finally shredded the wood and I could not zip tie any more motors to it whatsoever. So yeah, those are really good tricopters. So yeah, I got that. I crashed my hexacopter. Not even crashed it. I put it into the dirt. But, well, I should say the pavement.
Wait, this is your big one?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
So yeah, it was kind of weird because I was flying it. This is on the very last shoot. The client asked me to get – he basically wanted like a 360 pan at about – 399 feet exactly, and so that was a little FAA joke.
Oh, get it now.
Yeah,
some of us are slow.
I just thought you were CYA. I was really 510 feet or 410 feet, but
no,
yeah, I was 399. I know it exactly.
Yeah.
Every time I tell a story, 399.
But anyway, I was up there too. I was up there. I got my 360 pan and I started noticing that the thing was acting weird. And you know, I saw the light kind of flashing red, and then it would go green again, flash a couple times green, and then it would flash red, and then it would kind of act a little wobbly. So I was keeping an eye on it through the screen because I was running just GoPro through my FPV gear. That way I could at least – I didn't use it to fly it. I simply used it just to kind of frame everything up and get the shot I wanted the first time.
Yeah.
And I noticed that it was kind of jumpy and vibrating, and I put on – before I had flown, I put on some carbon fiber E300 props, and apparently NASA did not like that. Not at all. I brought it down, and literally I think it was probably 4 feet above the ground. I went to land, and right as I was about to start descending, it just flipped over on its own and just slammed into the ground. And lucky I didn't break anything except all the cheap carbon fiber props.
It's so, telling you something.
Well, yeah. So basically what I did was I went into the car because I always carry spare props. You never know. I put the stock E300 props back on. I did a recalibration and it flew fine. I never had any issues with it locking on the GPS. I never had it. And this is literally 2 minutes. It took just as long to get my props off, put the new ones back on, and put it back into the air. And I could not get it to replicate what was happening. And the only difference was I had all carbon fiber props all the way around it.
You know, I had this customer bring me a big hex one time, and he had done the same thing, except for he had spent a lot of money on props. He'd spent like – he had a hex. He'd probably spent $100 on props, maybe more. These nice carbon fibers, and he brought them to me, and we put them on, and everything flew. And he came back a couple days later, and he said, "Hey, dude, like my hex is flying like garbage." And when I started inspecting the props, they actually started like delaminating.
Yeah,
and I'd be interested to see. Obviously, you can't tell because you bashed it in the ground and broke your props, but be interesting to see if you kind of have the same thing where they start delaminating and then they don't cut through the air smoothly. And then they, you know, start causing a lot of vibration or something.
Well, I was going to say one of the props is fine, and I didn't have any issue with that. But I wonder if it's more along the lines of a receiver slash GPS, because you know how a lot of times carbon fiber fuselages and carbon fiber thises and thats will interrupt signal.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if having six, you know, 9-inch discs of carbon fiber flying around the outside of your GPS, I wonder if that has something to do with it or your flight controller.
Is your GPS below the prop level?
No, and that's the one thing. It's not. But it's not very far above.
I would guess that would be a problem if it was below, but above it shouldn't really, I wouldn't think. But, I mean, I'm with you. It sounds like, yeah, all of that, radio interference causing carbon fiber flying around could have something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, it has not done it since. I even, just to be safe, I had my daughter sitting in the living room with me, and I hovered it around her face just to make sure. I'm just kidding.
Everything's okay.
Yeah, I don't need any negative comments anymore. I apologize. But
here comes the hate mail.
No, but I went outside, and I did it again, and everything works fine. So I don't get it. I really don't understand. I just got rid of those props. They were $40 from eBay. They were actually pretty high quality props, but I'd stay away from them on something like that.
Well, there's one way to tell, right? Is get more props, carbon fiber props, put them on, fly it again, see if it does the same thing.
You know, that's a good idea. I'm going on eBay right now. I don't know if you can hear me typing or not.
Just do it with somebody else's hex, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, and for sure, the next time you do it, fly it over water so that the impact of the ground won't break the props. It'll just, be nice cushiony, like jumping into a swim pool.
You know, I was thinking I was going to fly it over the cotton fields here, but the water sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah, either that or sand. Fly it over the sand pile.
Mud works a little bit better to brace the impact.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Nice.
It's kind of like the mixture of both water and sand. So yeah, that's been pretty much it. I mean, it's been hectic. I've been running around like a chicken with my head cut off. I've been looking at a lot of these new AP combo stuff coming out from different vendors and just laughing, going, who is going to spend that much money on that when you could build it for so much cheaper?
Nice.
That's about it, man. That's it.
Cool. Well, for me, I kind of did some little FPV work with my little VTEL quad. I've been kind of gearing up for this whole thing. You know, Mike's been going crazy with his little mini and trying to do the racing, and I've never really used the FPV gear to kind of race around. I've just used it for aerial photography and kind of, checking things out from above. But I've been trying to decide, what should I use? Should I use the Mobius? Should I use the 600 TV line camera that came with my Fat Shark setup? And I think maybe you guys know about this, but when I use that Mobius, anytime I turn towards the sunlight, it totally blacks out the screen. And then when I turn back, into the shade, it's, the screen comes back and it's fine. But I'm thinking I'm going to have to go to a security cam or just use that 600 TVL camera from Fat Shark.
Well, I was going to suggest go to Security Camera 2000 and get their little $29. I think it's maybe it is a 600 TVL.
Yeah.
But I have that, and you can actually set the setting on there where it'll black out anything over a certain brightness.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't affect the rest of your video footage. It's awesome.
I wonder if I could do that with the Mobius. That would be nice.
Maybe that's what's going on with your Mobius. Maybe it's blacking it out after a certain brightness.
Yeah, it's to the point where I was like, oh man,
Well, it'll black spot the sun so that the sun's not all bright and you can fly straight into the sun like it's nobody's business.
Huh. You'll have to give that a shot. The Fat Shark camera I have is nice. I won't have any onboard recording if I don't. And that camera's small. I could maybe just use it alongside the Mobius. I could still have some onboard recording.
Do you have a GoPro?
I do. Yeah. And I use the GoPro on my like 450 and on my Hex, and I run the FPV gear through that. Same thing, kind of framing up the shots. But on this little mini quad, it seems like a lot of weight to be running FPV on.
Well, then I don't you better know. Add.
Did you see Mike was running his quad with his GoPro strapped to it?
And yeah.
He said it was working well.
Is he running 3S or 4S?
That I don't know.
See, I'm going to run 4S on my 250 quad.
I think the motors that he has, I think they only allow him to run 3S. If he put the same motors back on that I was thinking he was putting on, I think he's 3S is where he's at.
It's not really the motors per se you got to worry about. It's more along the lines of the ESCs. See, I found the freaking 12-amp ESCs that'll run 4-cell batteries for $16 a pop.
That's awesome.
Cool.
So I'm running a 3S on mine too, and that's weight is a concern for me. I think I've got it. I mean, I've been doing a lot of line of sight with it. I think I got it where I want as far as like being able to be maneuverable. It's not the fastest thing around, but I think it's pretty maneuverable. And so I need to just start doing some practicing with FPV. And I've been trying to fly it low on the ground. Same thing as like CPO. In the goggles, it's kind of hard. And I took it to a baseball field the other day, and I was cruising along, and I didn't realize I was going over top of the pitcher's mound, and it was a little bit taller than I wanted. Next thing you know, it's upside down. It's right side up, it's upside down. I mean, it just rolled. But it landed on its gear, and I took off and flew right back. So that was pretty cool.
Sweet. Nice.
And like Wade, I actually got to do some filming for the Utah Olympic Oval the other day. They put in this great big giant solar farm, and the guys that got me the gig flying up at the Utah Olympic Ski Park got me a gig doing the Olympic Oval Park. And so I got to go out there this week and fly around, fly over the solar panels and get some cool shots between the building and around the big Olympic spire and stuff. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
I strapped the Fat Shark goggles onto the guy producing the video's head and said, hey, you just tell me what you like and, you know, we'll talk about it. You show me the shots you want and I'll do them. And if you don't like it, you know, we'll move on. And it really actually, like, you know, usually I'll just do a bunch of shots myself until I feel like I get what I want. But it went so much faster when he was in control. And he's like, I like that. I don't like that. Do this, do that. And I kind of just did what he told me to do. And it took maybe like a 2-3 hour job down to less than an hour. So that was pretty cool. And then I had a funny experience. I know you guys, I think, I can't remember if I shared with you guys, but I bought a Skywalker.
Oh, yeah.
I bought it used, but like it looks brand new. I don't even know if the guy ever even flew it. I mean, there's not even a single scratch on it. So I brought it home. I went through it. Everything looked good. So I took it out to maiden it. And usually that Skywalker is a hand launch and a belly lander. But he put gear on it. And so I thought, oh, I'll just take it off. And so I took it off in the field. And I soon realized when I got in the air that the spot I was way too small for it. And so I had to circle like 10 times trying to bring it in, you know, close enough where I was still over the field and not going over anybody's property. And that when I touched down, you know, it would have enough room that it wouldn't smash into the chain link fence at the end of the field. And so it was pretty interesting. I had my buddy Andy with me and he was, you know, kind of walking me through and we were making, you know, talking together, but it took off really quick and easy, but coming down for a landing, I couldn't get it slowed down enough to, and you know, it's a football field and a half between the chain link fences, but yeah, I definitely need to take it someplace a little bit bigger to fly, but that's what I hope to turn into my FPV ship.
Nice. Is this the one with the doesn't the Skywalker have like the horizontal stabilizer up at the top on top of the vertical stabilizer? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Gosh, you know, off the top of my head, I think it's just traditional. It has this one has the vertical stabilizer and then it has the horizontal stabilizer and then the vertical stabilizer on top. But I know what you're talking about. Sometimes they put the horizontal stabilizer on top of the vertical stabilizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think this one's traditional, but
Is it like a carbon fiber boom, or is it fuselage that runs back?
It's a carbon fiber boom. I had to put 9,000 milliamps of battery in it for it to balance out. And so, I mean, it's made to hold a ton of battery or to, you know, camera up front or whatever. So
right.
Pretty cool.
Nice. I've been kind of thinking about my next FPV plane. The Bixler 2 was pretty good, but, you know, I still think there's probably a more stable platform than that.
And this thing just glided when it was in the air. It was just fine. But, you know, slowing it down to land was, I just wasn't in a good, if it was a belly lander, it would have been no problem. It was just those landing gear. I wasn't sure how far it was going to travel on the grass, but it ended up going a little bit further than I'd liked it to. So I might take the landing gear off. I don't know. But that's kind of all I have. I did want to just mention, I don't know if you guys saw the new DJI Inspire 1.
That thing is awesome.
The thing is way awesome. If anybody is interested in a pretty sweet quad, that's definitely cool. But did you see the price tag on it?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, let's just not ruin it. Let's talk about how cool it is. No, let's just talk about how cool it is. We don't need to know what it costs.
I'm going to spill the beans because I can't believe. I mean, you saw it, right? So it's got a pod in the middle. When you take off, the arms with the motors elevate up instead of like retractable landing gear.
Yeah.
And you got, you know, unobstructed camera view. But if you buy just the Inspire with one remote, it's $2,800.
Jeez, man. This is just getting out of hand.
If you buy it with two remotes, it's $3,300.
For a remote?
Yeah, or their transmitter. So it's the DJI transmitter. It almost looks like the one that comes with the Phantom. Has a few more options. But to get two DJI transmitters plus the quad, it was $3,338, I think, is what it was. And that's on sale right now. Pre-order sale.
Well, you know why? The reason it's so expensive is because the primary consumer for this product are going to be the real estate people, the professional, and prosumer type folks who want to do aerial videography and photography, who are going to, make a big tax write-off or in a business expense to do it.
Yeah.
And they're willing to pay $3,000, but the hobbyist isn't going to do that.
Yeah, that's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, it's, I will give them, it's a very ingenious design. And I think there was a lot of creativity that went into this, a lot of thought. I like the idea that the booms that hold the motors actually lift as opposed to the landing gear that would lift. And it does, it drops that camera down, and there aren't, very many. I don't even know if there are there any like ready to fly aerial photography or videography platforms that have a 360 degree unobstructed view from the camera. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, it just depends on. See, I don't know. The S900 you can get has the same thing. The gear comes up and it's completely out of the way.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like a lot of money for something different than retractable landing gear.
Yeah, I think it's definitely cool. But it's like CPO said, I don't think this is a hobbyist. And maybe that's good, Like the Phantom kind of has created some issues with being an affordable way to get in trouble. And maybe they'll start going out of that kind of realm, and maybe they won't, where they're getting into something that's more of a professional grade rather than a hobbyist grade. I don't know.
Wait, yeah. So the S900, I'm looking that up. That's $3,800.
Just for the frame, right?
No, yeah. That's motors, frame, okay. ESCs. The only thing you really need, you can get that with the A2 flight controller for $3,800.
Oh, okay.
Basically, all you need is a battery.
That's an octocopter, right?
That's a hex, I think.
That's a hex, okay.
But it's also huge, and it folds down, and I mean, there's a lot more to it than just. And honestly, the simpler, the better in my mind. You know, let's just be from my perspective. the simpler the better, the less crap that can break, you know?
Yeah, one crash on this Inspire, and I wonder, is the retractable, or I guess the elevating motor arms, is that still going to work? How is it done by a servo? Is it done, you know, I would think they'd have to do it with some type of servo, but yeah, I don't know. That's seems like it's points of failure, and I don't like that.
Now, what about the camera? This is also an issue where you've got basically an integrated camera that you can, I don't even know if you can change that out to something else if you wanted to.
It's spec wise, it's not as good as the GoPro by any means. I mean, it's, you don't have the same frame rates. You can't, you know, when I looked at the specs on it, a GoPro Hero 4 is definitely going to be a lot better than that camera. The one thing they did as a sales point is you can just spin the whole camera off and take it off and then put, you know, I'm assuming they'll build something that'll hold the GoPro, or, you know, they're going to come with an upgrade, but they're toting that it's upgradable, but it's like you spin off the whole gimbal and then you put a whole new one on. So, you know, it's just going to be another pile of money that you're going to have to pay.
So. Yeah.
But we'll put some links to some show notes. I'm sure everybody's seen it. It was like the first day, like everywhere was flooded, you know, with it. But I'll put some links to some videos in the show notes in case anybody's not sure what we're talking about or want to see it. I do have.
Well, it does look cool. I'll give them that. It looks really cool. It looks like a stormtrooper sort of freaky Star Wars looking thing.
Yeah, that's true. It did look kind of futuristic. I do have one piece of RC Hangar Time news that I'd like to share, and that I guess will kind of work into future shows. But we've set up a voicemail system, so you can call in and you can leave us a message or a comment, and we'll try to address your comment or your question on future shows. Obviously, if we start getting like 200-300 things, we can't cover those in all the shows, but we'll try to
get things. Why not? Let's just make it like a 7-hour video or a 7-hour show.
A marathon, RC Hangar Time voicemail marathon.
Ideas. If all three of our listeners call in once a week, it'll be fine.
So let me throw out the number and give you some instructions on how you can leave a message. The best and easiest way to find the information is to go to our website, rchangartime.com, click on the contact button. The phone number is pretty cool. It's 612-361-RCHT for RC Hangar Time. That translates to 7248. It's on the contact page. If you're calling from, say, a home phone and you don't have long distance, we set this up through Google Voice, and so there's a call me option there. You click on call me, you put in your home phone number, Google will call you, it'll ring a couple of times and drop you into the voicemail box, and you can leave a message. When you leave a message, you know, try to give us some information about yourself, who you are, where you live, or where you fly from, so we can kind of give you a shout out and kind of give you some credit on the show. And then we'll try to start playing some of those voicemails and answering some questions, or if you want to just critique us, leave us a comment, good or bad.
You know, mostly good.
We'd like to hear from you for sure.
I will say, one piece of advice. I think the better chances of getting played on the air is make it succinct and to the point fairly quickly. It's going to be really hard to deal with the, you know, people like to leave these long rambling messages. So just from my own experience in dealing with voicemails and shows, you know, get short, sweet, to the point, will always probably be easier for us to deal with. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. The other thing is too, is this is kind of the way we're setting this up isn't going to be a high quality recording. So, you know, if you could try to eliminate, I mean, you're going to be talking through your phone, just like you would leave a voicemail anywhere else. So if you could try to eliminate background noise or driving in the car with your radio playing, or You know, just try to leave your message why you don't have some things interfering, and then that way it'll help us, you know, be able to get it on the show too, better quality. Because I think we'll probably struggle with that just a little bit, but I've done some testings with it and it sounds pretty good. But you know, just be aware that this is a phone recording, so try to do the best you can to help us out with quality issues.
That's pretty stinking awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Thanks
to
for
see.
Setting that up.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, it was a collaborative effort. I mean, I kind of did the nitty gritty in the background, but I mean, I think it's something we've all wanted to do for a while, and I'm excited about it. I can't wait to get some awesome fan mail love, you know. Dustin's so awesome. He's a great host, those kind of things.
We'll see. You're going to have to fight for time for all my positive comments.
I know. I'm going to have to check the box every day because I'm afraid Wade's fan's is gonna fill it up.
My fan will fill it up?
Your fan, yeah. Your stalker. That's all I have for Hangar Time News. Does anybody else have anything?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, so guess we can jump into our topic.
This episode of RC Hangar Time is brought to you by SimpleCopter.com, makers of simple, rugged, and unique multi-rotor frames. Are you tired of having to replace an entire frame when you only break an arm? Or are you done with having a frame that looks like everyone else's? Then you need to go to Matt Hall's SimpleCopter.com. You'll find unique tricopter and quadcopter frames. They're simple, rugged, for flyers of all skill levels. And being that they're made up from wood, you can paint them to any color you choose. And they're cheap and easy to fix as well. So go to www.simplecopter.com right now and order your new frame today.
Our tonight's topic is props. I think we'll try to cover some aspects on how to choose a prop, how to balance a prop, maybe some experiences with good props, cheap props, what we like, what we don't like, some of the experiences we have. So I think we've all kind of had our experience with that. And Wade, you even just touched on, you know, some of your experiences with the props you just bought and tested out on your Hex. So I don't know, maybe you want to start off and kind of give us your thought on what you did and why you did and why you chose what you did.
Well, basically, just to get things rolling, I started off looking for a better alternative to the props that I was using, which was the standard DJI E300 props, which all in all, I thought that a lot of the vibrations were coming from those props. And that's basically why I decided to go after new props, because my camera, gimbal, and everything else was taking a bit of vibrations. And you could kind of see it in certain aspects on my video quality. And so what I did was I did a little bit of research, and some people were talking about these eBay props. So I was skeptical. I bought a set of 8 for $40, which is actually a pretty good price. and when the props came, I didn't expect much, but they were really decent props. I mean, they were a lot stiffer than your standard DJI props. They worked really well, but I didn't really see any improvement. And in fact, like I talked about earlier, it actually flipped the Hex over, and I don't know if that was caused by the props or whatever, but I'm just going to stick with the stock props for now. One of the things I was going to mention is I never really used to think that balancing your props is that big of a deal, but it is. Simple.
Yeah, definitely. And CPO, you've got some videos, you know, talking about balancing props. You've got the just kind of the standard, and then you also had a second video on the APC balancing for APC props.
Yeah, so I'll start with the APC prop balancing. That was trial and error on my part that prompted me. Like most of my videos, especially the quick tip type videos, some of them were longer tips than quick, but most of those are because I had to figure something else out on my own. And then once I figured it out, I just, you know, did a video. But the APC props was one of those. I'm sitting there trying to balance this prop and I'm struggling, and I'm adding, you know, CA, and I'm adding, I literally like piece of Velcro CA to it to give it a bunch of weight to get it balanced out. And come to find out, the prop wasn't the problem. It was the hole in the center wasn't drilled straight. And that caused me to do some research and come to find out APC actually has on their website a bit of information that suggests that you can't depend on the center hole for alignment when you're balancing your props. And so I think a lot of people don't know this, but you know, standard prop balancers have the two cones, and generally you put the two pointy ends of the cone together with the prop in the middle, and it kind of self-centers it. But it's dependent upon the holes in the center of the prop being straight, which on the APC prop, one side, I believe it's the front side, is molded, which is a perfectly centered hole. But the back side, and don't correct me on front or back, but you can watch the video. We'll put a link in the show notes. But I'm pretty sure it's the back side is actually just drilled, hand drilled. And so the way to – so if you use the two cones, it could actually end up mounting the prop on the balancer off center a little bit, which will cause it to never really balance, or you'll be balancing it off center, which would be even worse. So the response to that is, you know, on one side you use the flat part of the little prop adapter thing, and the other side you use the cone to center it, and it works really well. But that's something that wasn't intuitive to me in the beginning, and I watched a lot of people balancing props on YouTube videos, and they're all putting the two cones point to point. But ever since I learned that, now all of my props, whether it's APC or not, I'll use one flat side and one cone, and I've gotten pretty good at looking at it and going, okay, this is the molded, perfectly centered hole, and then this is the drill hole. And you know, even now on a lot of my props, I'll end up having to manually drill the hole to make it bigger to fit the motor shaft anyway. So I definitely don't depend on that for balancing. So,
so just to touch on that, because I experienced the same thing when I first started in the hobby. So just to clarify that, on the back side of the prop where you usually put the adapter ring, is that called a collet, or, you know, kind of adjust the size of your, or, you know, the prop diameter for your shaft?
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
So that's where you always put the cone. The cone always goes that way. And I'm going to say this is usually the way for all props that have that type of system where you put that little ring in the back to size it up. You're always going to put your cone in the back, and then on the front, always put the flat side directly in front of the prop. Because I did the same thing. I went down the road, you know, you balance the blades so you get your prop so that it'll lay horizontally just fine. You flip it over. And then what happens is, you know, it'll either, when you lay it flat, it's either going to flip itself over 180 degrees or it's going to stay. And then you're going to flip it again and see if it, you know, flips itself 180 degrees. And when you do that, you'll know that your hub is off balance. And so that's kind of what you're talking about, adding a bunch of glue to the hub on the heavy, on the light side to kind of balance that out. And I think you'll start to see that, or I've noticed that with even, you know, you go buy some props off eBay or you buy props off wherever. If they have that ring adapter on the back, I always put the cone in that side, and then I always just put the flat side on the front, like I would like with a nut, you know, whatever you have, to, what kind of adapter you have to hold your prop on. It makes it a lot easier to balance that hub.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's right. The front side is the side that's got the drilled side, so to speak. And the back side is the molded side. Yeah. But it, you know, what you said makes sense. You know, obviously I did a video, trying to explain, but you'd be surprised if you're a new guy in the hobby and you go in and start researching balancing props. Almost all of the prop balancing videos show you putting the two cones point to point with the prop in the middle. And it just it doesn't work for that style of prop.
Yeah.
but I mean, and I, you know, so the other thing is, and I'll ask you if you do it this way as well. But I also the sizing ring, I put that into the prop, and then I balance it with that in there. so that if that has any variance in weight around the circle of the ring, that's included in the balancing. Do you do the same thing, or do you balance it without the ring?
I personally balance it the same way I'm going to put it onto the plane or onto the quad or, you know, whatever. I want to take it off the balancer and I want to just put it right on. So if I need to use the reducer ring, or, you know, I'm going to put that right in, balance it, I'm going to put it the same way.
Yep. Okay.
I think
that's the right way.
Yeah. I use it. Basically, I balance it exactly how it's going to go on to the airplane.
Yeah. And, you know, balancing the hub, I think, is kind of challenging for people, or, you know, sometimes you know, I mean, if I'm in the field, and like the other day when I was up at the Olympic Oval, I nicked my props, two props on my quad and destroyed two props. And so I had to change out really quick. I put them on my prop balancer really quick and I balanced them left to right so that, you know, the blades were balanced. And I checked the hub, but I didn't have time to either sand or to add CA. So I just put it on. And, you know, surprisingly, you know, it's usually not too bad. But there's some props that I bought that, you know, I mean, that hub is so badly balanced that it causes problems. And so I think it's pretty important that you spend some time to balance your hub. I don't think a lot of people do that. They just balance, you know, blade weight. But, you know, that's something you should definitely get in the habit is balance your hubs also.
Yeah, that's video number two that I did with props is exactly that, is showing complete prop balance. Because, again, I'm looking at, you know, as a new person myself, I'm looking at YouTube video after YouTube video, and there's all this talk about getting the blades balance, you know, side to side, but not a lot of discussion about the hub. I was doing my tricopter build and just like said, okay, I'm just going to do a video. I got to balance them anyway. I'm just going to do a video of me balancing these three different props for my tricopter. And I think it turned out to be interesting because all three of them required different types of balancing. You know, one of them, I ended up balancing, just the blades because the hub was just fine, I'm pretty sure. And another one, I ended up having to balance the hub first before I could get that stable before I went in and did the blades. And then the third one, I had to do the blades first and then fine-tuned it with the hub. And I just showed different characteristics of, you know, how to tell if it's a hub problem. That's because it's kind of misleading, you know, if you think you're balancing the blades – it could actually be a hub problem if you're not sure what to look for. So I just spent some time going through that. But again, like I said, I watch video after video and I'm thinking, oh, as long as I can get it to lay flat, you know, level side, you know, side to side, I'm good to go. And then, you know, later on, obviously, the more I learn, the more I know. And I'm like, oh, if I put it at a 45 degree angle and it still doesn't hold, well, now I have a hub problem to deal with as well. Or if I flip it, like you said, flip it over, you know, 180 from where it is, and does it stay that way or does it want to go back to where it was? It's interesting yet surprising how many people just stop at the basic, you know, getting the blades balanced left and right and don't take it any further. And I think it's just because they don't know any better. I didn't. Right.
I mean, it goes – you can balance pretty much anything that rotates on an aircraft. A lot of people don't even know that you can go beyond the props, hubs, and you can even balance the bells on mm-hmm. your motors. And that's how you're really going to get, like, optimum performance.
Yeah. I've personally never balanced my motors. I know how to do it. I know the theory behind it. Makes perfect sense. But I've never actually taken the time to do it.
So let me ask you this. I like APC props. I use APC props on all of my multi-rotors. I usually fly them on my planes. They're a little bit more expensive. On my VTEL, I do run some turnigy props that I've found that I kind of like, some 9-inch props. But I feel like the same thing with motors. If I go and buy the bulk props from someplace on the web, I'm usually going to spend a lot of time balancing them. And the same thing with motors. If I buy decent motors, usually they'll come balanced. But if I buy the cheapo, you know, $5 motor from some website on the web, I usually end up having problems with balancing. You guys have that same experience, or?
I think that's a big difference between the low cost stuff and the higher end stuff, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's just like we were talking about with Josh a couple episodes ago about, you know, the molds, the quality of the molds, and I mean, they have to go through and they got to build the molds, and then they got to, you know, basically produce certain within certain specifications. And I think a lot of companies don't have that same parameters, I guess, and they just throw other crap out and makes your job a lot harder to get stuff balanced.
You know, when I built my little VTEL, my 250 size VTEL, I ordered some of the HQ props, six threes is what they were. And every time I either touched the blade or, you know, like I'd run it through a tree branch, like the prop would explode. One side of it would be gone. And so I went through probably a dozen props in like a day or so, you know, and I was like, gosh, I'm out of props. And so I was going to put in an order. I was going to do a little more research. These were kind of the props that everybody else was saying, oh, these are great. These are what we should use. I went up to the local hobby shop and they had some APCs, 6x4 inch props. And of course they were a lot more expensive. I think I bought a set of four props is what I bought. And then I bought two extras, a pusher and a non-pusher. And I put those on, and I instantly noticed that they flew different. Like, it was quieter. It seemed to be a little more punchy. And I started ripping around on them, and I ran them through the trees, and I crashed it. I landed in the grass. I hit the tree trunk. My props didn't break. I mean, I bashed on this thing for like an hour, and no props, you know, no prop explosions, whatever. So I was done. I went through all five of my batteries. I go to put it in my car, and I noticed on the front right prop, it's a half inch smaller each blade. So I had taken it from a 6 inch prop down to seriously a 5 inch prop. I guess rubbing it against the tree, but it honestly like just ground the prop down to about a 5 inch prop and never exploded. And I don't even know how long I flew around that way, you know.
So it's funny you brought that up because I was looking at the prop on my wing. I have an FT Versa wing that I converted to a pusher motor. And I was looking at it the other day thinking, maybe I should mount this FPV gear on it, because I actually built that originally to hold FPV gear. And I ended up, you know, not really doing anything with it. But I was looking at the prop on that, and it's an APC prop as well. And it literally the ends about a half an inch on both ends of the prop are gone, and it's like it's stunted into this shorter prop. And I have no idea what I did to that to break the ends off. But it, as far as I know, the last time I flew it, it flew just fine. But it's definitely it's the same thing. It's just the prop is shorter than it's supposed to be. I have no idea why.
You guys are talking all about these props that have like basically your standard props with the holes in the middle, and you put it on the prop shaft and you tighten it down with a prop nut, right?
Yeah,
right.
So how do you go about balancing a DJI E300 or E600 prop?
That's what I was actually going to ask you, because I know they have that the thing built into it. I don't know.
All right, so this is perfect, because actually I found it online the other day through a buddy of mine. He owns FloridaUAV.com, and I told him I'd throw his name out there just because, I mean, this guy's done nothing but great things for the hobby and for me personally. I mean, he's just such a help. But he sells this thing from Orion RC. It's a double-sided, double-threaded, basically aluminum shaft that you can put right on you know, your standard Dubro prop balancer, and you screw the prop right onto the end of it. and you screw it right on, and it's just like balancing any other prop.
So I would think, and maybe I'm just being naive here, but I would think that if DJI is going to build the bolt into the prop, that those props would come balanced. Is that not true?
They do come very well balanced, for the most part. I only had one that was really out of balance, and I think it's just because I might have hit it or done something, did something to it in the process of flying or putting it in the car or whatever. Yeah. But they came pretty well balanced. But, I mean, you never know. You know, you might – I always check it just in case.
Yeah, that's new to me. I've looked at those props and I've wondered, you know, how you balance those. But I guess you need to do a little research. And like you said, your buddy sells the tool to allow you to do it.
Yeah, and I'll put the link in the show notes for all you who have E300 and E600. It works like a charm. It really does. And it's only like $10 or $6 or something. I'm not sure right off the top.
Well, it's worth it.
My head. Yeah, I mean, right. You can't beat that.
So I don't have any experience in this at all, and maybe you guys do, but how do you balance a folding prop? Or we're talking about strange props.
Okay, this is actually – okay, I was going to let – I got excited. I'm sorry.
I go for it, Wade. It sounds like you got the answer.
All right, so I've done some research. As usual, I've been online, and there's an app by VR. It's just VR, and it's a different app that'll allow you to do like accelerometer testing and all sorts of other stuff. Let me see what it is real quick, and we can probably edit this out or just leave it in there while I'm searching. It's called VR Mobile. It's called Vibration Research Corporation. And you've got all sorts of calculators, and it's a free app. Engineering calculators like acceleration, unit conversions, shock calibration or calculators. You can do noise meters, accelerometers. And then they got this one feature that I found really interesting, and I've actually used it on my multi-rotor before I had the prop balancer. For the DJI self-tightening style props, it's got a light strobe. And basically what you can do is by using the strobe light, you spin your props up, you know, and I usually spin it up just enough to get them going where the thing's not going to fly off. You turn on this strobe light and it slows it down. It seems like it slows the props way down, and you can actually see if one of the blades is off, one of the, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It actually puts the prop into, like, slow motion, and you can really tell, just like on a helicopter, when you check, you put the tape on the blades, and you check the disc and make sure everything, you know what I mean? It's the same thing, but with a strobe light, and it slows it way down.
Yeah. So I'm looking at a video with somebody using this tool right now, and I could see how it, like, stops the prop in motion. But then how do you tell the balance out of that?
See, and that's...
Okay. See, now. Man, that's cool.
Is that not or what?
Yeah, I'm looking at this video, and I don't even know where I found it, but on DIY drones, and you can see literally the arm of the quadcopter just rotating because of the balance being off.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
And you'll be able to tell because basically what it is when there's a vibration, it causes it to move, obviously. And so I can't remember exactly which one it is, but I want to say – the lower one is the heavier side. And you'll see if you look straight on from – basically if you're looking at it like straight on at the prop, not from top down, but you can only see the side profile, you'll be able to see that one of the props is actually like higher or lower than the other, and you can utilize that to balance it that way. It's a little bit more pain in the butt way to do it, but it's called stroboscope.
I have to check that out. I don't. I have one folding prop that's on the front of my ascent glider, but other than that, I've never used a folding prop.
Yep. So it just says, all it says is that you can go from 1 to 60 hertz, and then strobing helps one see objects vibrating too fast for the eyes to see. All right. And basically, it's so cool, man, how that works.
It's crazy seeing how much this, even the motor mount, how much it moves and bends and flexes because of vibration.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Make sure you get me that that video over and we'll put it in the show notes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I don't even have a I'm going to use this on other stuff too. That's cool.
So we've kind of covered balancing. Let's talk about just props in general, like how do you know what prop you should be using? Kind of I guess maybe just kind of a, not really a guess, but like maybe a basic overview for people, because that was kind of something that I had problems with when I first started. And I know people that have brought me quads, you know, they'll bring me something that's running like 1200 KV and they've got like a 16 inch prop on it. And I'm like, whoa, this is definitely not the right prop for the motor that you're running. So maybe we could just talk about like the numbers on the prop really quick. CPO, I know that you have some information about pushers versus regular prop. Maybe we could kind of touch about that too at the same time.
Okay.
Anybody want to give a brief explanation about the numbering on the props?
Well, I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, if you look at your props, there's a really good, just to start off first, there's a really good website called rc-airplane-world.com. And it kind of goes into our understanding RC propeller size. And it's a really good tutorial on everything propeller. You know, it goes into understanding the propellers. It goes into size labeling. So whenever you look at a prop, if you're looking at it in inches or millimeters, just depends. Your first number is going to be the prop size, you know, from the hub out, or the total size of the prop. And then the second number is going to be your pitch. And the pitch is just how far the propeller will move through the air every single revolution of the engine. So that's pretty much it.
And so to kind of expand on that just a little bit, some, and maybe you guys have experienced this too, like if you buy an APC prop, you'll get like a 10 by 4.5 or 10 by 4.7, I guess is what it is. So 10 inches long. And then the pitch is the 4.7, which, like you said, weight is one revolution should give you 4.7 inches, you know, per revolution. Some of these props that I've noticed that I buy from online places like RC, Ready-Made Quads, or a couple other places, they come with a number like 6045.
Yep.
Same thing, 6-inch prop, 4.5 inch or 4.5. pitch, I guess. Has anybody else seen that?
Yeah, I mean, that's fairly common, and what that does is just basically gives you and I've only really seen those on the not cheaper but the imported style, you know, like gem fans and stuff like that, I guess. But it's basically just not having the point on there, the decimal point.
Yeah.
I could imagine that it's fairly hard and worthless to print a decimal point on a propeller, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then you know, smaller props, higher KV motors. Everybody agree with that?
Oh yeah.
Yes. I mean, so I'll be honest with you, the one thing that's been a little bit mystical for me is knowing what size prop to put with which application. So, you know, I just do the research and figure out what other people are using and start there. But I mean, what's the recommended way to figure out, okay, I've built this Apollo 50. I've got a, you know, 800 KV motor in it. How do I know what a good starting point is for prop size? Well, if somebody else hasn't built one, then I can just go copy.
I think a lot of people think that to go faster or to get more performance on the prop, I got to go to a bigger prop. So, you know, like I got a 1000 KV motor, and if I spin 10 inch props, I'm going to be able to have more thrust than a 9-inch prop, which isn't true. So your lower KV motors are going to have more torque. So they're able to spin, you know, a bigger prop, and then your high KV motors don't have as much torque. So they're going to want to spin, you know, a smaller prop at a faster speed. a rule of thumb for me, if I'm around 1,000 kV or lower, I'll spin a 9 or a 10-inch prop. If I'm over 1,000 kV, I'm going to spin a 9 to an 8-inch prop. And depending on the pitch, I can get the same performance out of, an 8-inch prop or a 9-inch prop versus, going a lower kV and being a 10-inch and a lower inch. So I guess kind of the first thing is to kind of look at manufacturer's recommendations. Because if you've got a higher kV prop and you put a or I mean motor and you put a bigger prop on it, you're obviously going to have a bigger amp draw. You're going to have a less, you're going to have less life on your battery. But I think you just kind of have to experience it for yourself. You high kV motors, you're going to be small props. Low kV motors, you're going to be bigger props. And realistically, prop size and lower kV versus higher kV and bigger props, you should be able to match the performance, either way. It's just the amount of amp draw you're gonna have, I think, is gonna be your biggest thing.
Yeah, you need a watt meter.
Yep, and actually, I do that once I figure out what my and usually, like I said, I'm copying what somebody else has already done as a starting point. I put on the watt meter to make sure I'm not drawing more amps than my ESC can handle. That's my primary concern, at least
Yeah.
initially.
When I very first started out in RC, I was building these Delta Wings, and I was using a lot of these like Blue Wonder style motors. And when I finally figured out what kV was, and that oh, this motor's gonna spin faster, I went from like a 1,500 kV to a 3,000 kV, but I didn't change my prop size. And I started burning out the motors, and I went over to the hobby shop, and I'm like, oh, these cheap Chinese motors, give me something comparable. And they didn't have anything comparable. But I started talking to the guy, and he's like, you know what your problem is you're trying to spin an 8 or 9 inch prop on a 3,000 kV motor. You need to go to a smaller prop. And so he kind of hooked me up with a prop. I put a new motor on, and one of my friends, we hadn't flown for a while, but he kind of experienced the same thing. He's just burning up motor after motor after motor, and he just kept putting on these 9-inch props. And he probably went through, five or six motors before I finally got a hold of him and said, "Hey man, you're running too big of a prop." And his exact words were, "I need a bigger prop so that I can go faster." And I think if you just spend the time to kind of do a little research or look at the manufacturer's recommendation and try to stick with that, you'll be more successful than just trying to guess and,
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there's enough stuff out there to where, I mean, you're never just going to go from zero to let's just buy everything and make it up. If you see an airplane that you want to get, right? Let's just say I want to get a 5 pound airplane. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's 5 pounds. Then you can just go online and there's calculators that'll say, I need to fly a 5 pound airplane that's fully loaded. And then there's calculators that are free. Just type in literally prop to thrust and ESC calculator, and it'll tell you everything you need based upon how much weight you have. Or if you have a motor already, what can I run and how much will it handle? It'll go the other way too. You know what I mean? So there's no real answer. It just depends on how you want to fly. There's a general rule of thumb of watts per pound, but when it all really boils down to it, just get a simple prop calculator or anything like that online, and it'll tell you kind of a general rule of thumb.
Yeah, the website that I've used for that exact same thing in the past is eCalc,
Yeah.
and I believe it's www.ecalc.ch. And
Yep.
you can kind of go through, this is what I'm trying to do, this is what I'm trying to achieve. Yeah, get some information about it. Same thing, I think, as long, when you go from like a 2 cell to a 3 cell to a 4 cell, that's going to change not your kV rating, but it's going to change your revolutions per minute going to another cell. So, you get your kV by timesing that per volt. So obviously when you go from a 2-cell to a 3-cell to a 4-cell, you're going to change the speed of your motor, which means you should decrease your prop diameter. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize that too, that I'm running 1,000 kV and I'm running it on 3-cell, and maybe a 10-inch prop is applicable. But when I go to a 4-cell, I need to drop that prop size maybe down to a 9. You know, most of the time it'll run with a 10, but, you know.
8x6? Yeah, 8x5?
Yeah, you know, you got to change that diameter too, or you're not doing anything. You're just going to overheat your electronics. You're going to burn up your ESCs, and you're not going to extend your battery life by going to a higher cell count. So, yeah. Following the manufacturer recommendation is sometimes good. It's a good place to start, but it's not always the in concrete either. I think they kind of play it safe. So there's a lot of times that I'll bump my KV up and I'll go a prop size up even, you know, or, you know, maybe I'll go up, you know, up in volts and go down in prop size too. It kind of depends. You just got to play with it and figure out what works best for you.
Right.
So I'm not a gasser guy. I never have been a gasser guy, but I know there's a big difference between gasser props and e-props also. Does anybody have any experience with that?
Yeah. Don't use one on the other.
It's particularly worse going with a gasser with an e-prop on it. Yes. It's not very efficient to put a standard prop on an electric motor, though, just because of the weight, but I don't think you'll kill it.
Yeah. I've tried putting, when I was in my early days, I put on a gasser prop on an electric motor, and it didn't go so good for me.
So, just heavy.
Yeah, really heavy.
Yeah, just look at the freaking, all you got to look and see if it has like an E designator, like 9x4E. A lot of the APC props will say electric, or look on the packaging and make sure it says specific to what it is.
Yeah, a lot of slow flyer props are for electric.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to put a slow flyer prop on a Super Tiger 90.
No. It's going to fold in. It'll be a foldable prop, whether you like it or not.
So one more question that I have, and this is pushers. So when I first started flying wings, I was buying pusher prop after pusher prop after pusher prop. And you know, you put them on the same way as you put on a non-pusher prop, and they're twice as much usually for APCs anyways. So you spend more on a pusher prop, or what is it, counterclockwise for pushers and clockwise for pushers for guys that follow multi-rotors. But, on a wing, obviously I see the need for a pusher on a quadcopter or a multi-rotor because you need to spin in different directions. But I soon realized that I didn't really need a pusher prop on my Delta wings.
No.
Because you're basically just mounting the prop the same way, either way. You know,
you just reverse the motor direction.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's all I've ever done. I didn't even know that there was reverse or pusher props for the longest time.
So is there any reason why you would run a pusher prop on a pusher style plane rather than a tractor style plane?
Just to do it. I mean, I'm sure there's a reason out there, but I mean, honestly, I've never seen a real reason to buy a pusher. I just buy the regular prop.
Just flip it over?
Yeah.
No, yeah. Or just run it straight.
Well, so you always put your numbers facing forward, right? Because that's the way it's going to drag. So you can't take a non-pusher style prop and flip it over. You obviously need to change the direction in the way the motor spins, but like, you know, you're going to mount a pusher prop versus a regular prop the same way on an electric motor, and then you're just going to change the way the motor spins.
Right.
So is there a benefit of running a pusher prop in that scenario?
The real benefit, and the reason why it's designed to spin the different direction is, as far as I understand it, and I actually did a video on pusher versus standard props and how to install them, how to tell which way is which, because I think a lot of people put on a standard prop in a pusher configuration and don't reverse the motor, so they're spinning the wrong direction, which is not very efficient. But but at any rate, because let's see, I'm trying to think of. I think the distinction, the reason why you would want a pusher prop, is because it allows you to spin the motor in a direction that will continue to so. Holy crap, I can't think right now. The nut that holds the prop on, right? The prop nut.
Yeah.
Okay. If you spin it one direction, it's going to want to unscrew itself naturally. If you spin it the other direction, it's going to want to screw itself naturally tighter. So it's my understanding that a pusher prop was designed to have the basically the counter rotation against that screw, because if you just take it and reverse it, then it's going to want to naturally unscrew itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, but the answer is you can certainly put a standard prop on and then reverse the motor to counter that. But
so if you have a lock nut or a nylon threaded nut, I mean, that really probably doesn't apply either.
Or just a freaking washer. I mean, honestly, if you tighten it on there, due to the, especially if you're using composite style, even wooden props. I mean, it doesn't matter, because you're going to have enough compression and pressure. Once you get it tight enough, it's not really going to work itself loose unless you really have a unbalanced prop.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, I use Threadlock, on my prop nuts anyway. I just, as a matter of practice, anytime I do metal to metal and I just want to lock something down and keep it there, I use a little dab of Threadlock. So I've never had a prop unscrew on me, but I do use a pusher configuration prop on my pusher planes when I can. But you're right, they're more expensive, and the only thing that they do is allow the motor to turn a different direction. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Yep.
But as also was said on the quadcopters or the hexacopters, the multi-rotors that require very specific directions from different motors to counterbalance, that's when you really have to pay attention, because then it matters. You can't just turn the motor any willy-nilly way and expect it to fly properly.
Yeah. To get your yaw effect, you got to be able to spin motors faster or slower to get that torque. I guess that would be another reason why you'd want to have a pusher prop, is if your plane is – you know, if you get some torque roll in it, maybe you need a pusher to help balance out torque, or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, most of the torque negation is going to be just due to the pitch and the angle of the motor mount. If you're doing single rotation, cool. You know, another thing is if you're running two motors, twin motors.
Yeah, yeah. You know, counter.
Yeah.
You spin them opposite directions.
Or if you're running, like, a lot of these guys run these counter-rotating props on these smaller F3A or F3P. I can't remember which one the smaller one is. The indoor super slow aerobatics F3A.
Yeah.
F3P, I can't remember.
I have
but
no
anyways,
idea.
I'm like, dumb tonight. I cannot think for something.
I thought it was just me. Thank you.
Yeah. It's F3P, indoor pattern. But basically, they'll run counter-rotating props, and that's a good time. You'd want to use reverse and, you know, pusher and puller prop on there. But those airplanes are amazing.
Anything else that we haven't covered? I mean, I think we've covered props. Does anybody have a favorite prop they like to buy for all applications, or...?
For my airplanes, I generally default to APC for a couple reasons. They're high quality, well trusted. Second reason is I can usually find them somewhere locally. Almost all the local hobby shops carry a whole slew of APC props, so that makes it convenient when I just need to run pick one up. For my multi-rotors, it varies in what I'll use. My tricopter right now, my tricopter has either, like, you know, super cheapo, you know, Hobby King props, or right now I'm running Gem Fams on them, I believe. And, you know, I'll pretty much run whatever I can get, you know, cheap on those things.
Well, you know, I was going to actually add on one thing that we really didn't talk about with the prop things, and I know we're kind of running long here, is number of blades.
Yeah, three blade versus two blade.
Versus four blade. I mean, there's all sorts of different props out there. But basically, to sum it all up, the more blades, the less efficient 99% of the time. Yeah. Most of the time, you're going to run different blades for either, okay, two-bladed are going to be your most efficient 99% of the time. Three-bladed, obviously, you run that for looks. And for me, on my FPV, my big, giant 1.8-meter FPV airplane, I'm running a three-bladed prop on that because I want it to be a little more torquey. It's definitely not as efficient. I know I could probably get a longer flight time out of it, but I like the fact that I can spin up and have a lot more instant kind of pump or, you know, punch. But the speed is obviously going to go down.
You know, it's interesting because the helicopters, the trend right now is going towards three-bladed main rotors and then three-bladed tail rotors. That's kind of like the trend.
So does anybody want to explain that? I can give a kindergarten version of why three-bladed or four-bladed props are less efficient. Does anybody have a really good explanation?
Well, I mean, it's...
I mean, basically, my explanation is the way that a prop works is you need to cut air, and you need to have that force to lift, to help create that lift. So cutting through clean air will make your prop more efficient. It'll get that, I guess, that kind of lift in the air. On a three-bladed or a four-bladed prop, your air doesn't have enough time to recover. And
right.
So you're slicing through unclean air, which makes that lift less efficient. Does everybody agree with that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the gist of it. It's called like parasitic airflow or something like that. But basically what it is, two blades are more efficient because, it's cleaner air, like you said. Now, multi-bladed props are really useful when the diameter is constrained. So you can't run
lift, right?
Right. And that's what I was actually going to kind of get to when it comes to my FPV plane. It's a rear-mounted, top-mounted propeller. So it's a pusher. I'm using literally a pusher three-bladed prop or a reverse motor standard three-bladed prop. and I can't run the most efficient two-bladed prop on there. I just can't because that would be like a 10 by something prop, and I can't run a 10-inch prop because what it does is it's going to strike the tail boom. And so what I did was I went to a three-bladed prop, which allowed me to go smaller on the diameter, bigger on the pitch, get more torque out of it, and still be somewhat efficient without having to redesign the entire airplane.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sometimes you're constricted by height to the ground or by the tail boom or something like that. So, yeah, going to a three-bladed prop sometimes is your only option. But, yeah, you're going to decrease maybe battery life or, something. Cool. Anything
but
else?
They look so cool.
They do look cool. They're definitely cooler. I think... kind of the same thing goes with a lot of guys running the 250 size quads are going to a 3-inch prop also, or a 3-bladed prop because you can't spin a bigger diameter. So yeah, you're going to lose some efficiency, but you're going to get, like you said, more torque or more lift because you can still spin a small prop and kind of pick up that extra blade.
Yep. I'm running Gym Fan, the small Gym Fan 5x something or another 3-bladed props on mine. So just because it looks cool, I don't even really care about lift and all that crap. I just think it looks freaking sweet, man.
It's awesome.
All right. Anything else?
No, I think I'm good, man. I've talked way too much.
I think that covers most of it, at least.
Well, if anybody has any comments on props and like to leave us a voicemail for this first week, can leave us a comment. Maybe if we're smoking crack and we don't know what we're talking about, you could leave us a message and you know, if we could maybe address something or a comment or something, that'd be kind of fun for our first week. Maybe we could rehash it at a later time, but
yeah.
Cool.
I think that's kind of a wrap. I think we kind of went over about everything I can think of.
Yeah.
We'll put some resources in the show notes. CPO, you had some notes. I had some notes. Wade, you have some stuff we can put to the show notes, and we'll try to put some one-on-one or one-on-one type stuff in the show notes so you can hit some of these websites to help with prop info too.
Yeah.
Right on.
Cool.
All right, guys.
Good times.
Hey.
You've been listening to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the RC aircraft hobby. For more info, you can go to our website at www.rchangartime.com or look for us on Facebook at RC Hangar Time. And if you have any questions, please feel free to email us. For Mike, it's Mike@rchangartime.com. For Wade, that's Wade@rchangartime.com. Dustin, you guessed it, Dustin@rchangartime.com. And for TJ, it's crash@rchangartime.com. What the heck? Anyways, again, thanks for listening and keep flying.